Bob Beautlake has been a consistent contributor to our conference programs. He's a member of the American Society of Dowsers, an engineer, a businessman, psychotronics demonstrator, experimenter, and theoretician. This industrious gentleman from Chicago brings us quarks, occult chemistry, and the string model. Bob, is that anything like paper dolls?
Yeah, sure.
All right, first, I want those of you who are not familiar with the book Occult Chemistry to be somewhat familiar with its background, because that's the real basis of this talk this morning. Before the turn of the century, C.W. Leadbetter and Annie Besant, who were amongst the founding members of the Theosophical Society, one day decided to take a look at an atom clairvoyantly to see what it was made of. What they saw is an amazing description of what we now know in today's modern physics as quarks, the basic fundamental building blocks of all massive particles. Now, they chose the simplest that they knew of because they had the able help of Sir William Crookes, who was also in the group and associated with the Order of the Secret Dawn, or the Golden Dawn. So they chose the hydrogen atom. They got some hydrogen gas, went into a state of samadhi, narrowed their perception down, smaller and smaller and smaller, and what they saw was a small, shining ovoid, almost crystal-like, which appeared to be pushing back the stuff around it. Okay? So it looked almost egg-shaped. When they perceived and saw this shining sphere, they saw little shining lights whirling around on the inside, tumbling. And then they managed to still those through their psychic ability, hold them still so they could see them. And they saw that each one of those little shining dots consisted of three more dots. So we get into quite a complex sequence of what a simple proton, which is the heart of a hydrogen atom, looks like. Now, this began around 1895. They were begun publishing in the Newsletter of Theosophy out of London in the early 1900s. After a number of articles had been written, a small book was then published in about 1909, the first edition of Occult Chemistry. The research continued on. They used a number of other people to help them record what they saw. One of those persons was Jinasadra, who later became the president of the Theosophical Society. In 1919, an additional edition, the second edition, came out. This was a compendium of all the work from 1895 up to and including that date. However, the editors were not familiar with the work, so they just stuck the stuff together, literally. It got glued together. Therefore, there are some errors in the second edition. Now, the second edition is now available from Health Research in California, and I think the price is $6. It's a bargain. If you're interested at all in this area, it's the best bargain you can get. Now, along a number of years, the research continued off and on individually by Ledbetter and Bessant. Ledbetter died in 1934. I believe it was 34. I may be wrong about the year, but and Bessant either shortly before or shortly after. I don't recall the details. In 1951, Ginisadra sat down, because he was the recording secretary on these sessions, and he made the drawings, so he knew exactly what the details were. Also, there's another woman whose name I forget who helped him. They, in turn, went through all the letters, all the publications, everything that they had, all their notes, and assembled this book, which was printed in 1951. 1,500 copies, and that's it. This, for a nuclear physicist, should be his Bible. Anybody. It's no longer available. It's out of print. Unfortunately, I got Joyce a copy by Xeroxing it, page by page, which cost 4 cents a page, and it hours and hours of work. Now, that explains where this came from. Now we're going to take you also a few more steps into some modern physics. But first, I think we'll go into the slides, and if we can catch the lights, we'll start up the slides and explain that. Now, the very first thing that they saw, can you focus up on the top? That's it, thank you. All right. You'll notice this is called hydrogen variety 1. There is a hydrogen variety 2, which is an isotope. It's explained in the book, but I won't go into it because it gets awfully complicated if I do. Now, in theosophy, there is a physical level of existence and an etheric level. Now, you will notice that E5 is listed here. This is the gaseous state of the etheric level of existence. Then there is E4, E3, E2, and E1. Above E1 is the astral plane of existence. Okay? Now, what they saw at the gaseous state in the etheric, which is physical, this is the borderline. This is the true borderline. This is physical, and above that is all etheric. They saw this ovoid rotating, pulsating, shining with bright lights in it. What they saw was 1, 2, 3 bright lights connected together in like a triangle, and another 3 bright lights connected together in a triangle. Each one had a polarity. This lower one is minus, but it interlinked and interconnected, but it never ran through the other one. They somehow managed to avoid each other, like the plague. They didn't want to touch each other. Here is the plus portion of that atom. Now, within each one of these so-called little lights was a little heart-shaped thing. Now, as they took this and blew this up, they got into what is called the E4 level, and there we see, we take this specific triangle here, which is the positive one, and they examined it, and you'll see that you have these 3 heart-shaped things, a plus, a minus, and a plus, and here you have a minus, a plus, and a minus, which is opposite, and then over here you have 2 pluses and a minus, but they're pointing away from each other. Here they're in a line. Now they describe when an electric field is applied to the viewing area, what happens is all these little heart-shaped things line up. They go zing, whoop, like this. That is the basic principle of a patent that was issued about 3 years ago to rapidly subtract heat from red-hot material to cool it rapidly, quench it, by applying a high-voltage electrostatic field. And that's really what these people saw happen psychically 80 years ago. Now, as you go up to the E2 level, the three that are together split apart, and we only have two, but the two that are left are lined up, are the ones with an energy force flowing through them. You see how the little heart-shaped depressions are lined up, and one splits out. You go up to the E2 level, and they split out again, and then you finally get up to the E1 level, and they're nothing but little pluses and minuses. All right, next. Those little heart-shaped things look like these. These are called Anu. Originally, they were called ultimate atoms, but because of the confusion of the terminology, they gave it a whole new name, so it wouldn't be and couldn't be confused. So they call it an Anu. There's a positive one and a negative one. And what they saw was, they saw the energy flowing in from the astral plane, in through the top, out through the bottom here, and into the top of the other one, and then out through here, and then back out into the astral plane again. Now, this is an energy flow. It also is pushing back what appears to be space. So it is literally creating internally a vacuum. Okay, it's like a bubble in water, pushing back the surrounding space. It consists of 10 bands of energy. The three heaviest bands, you will notice, they're heavier, are the three different kinds of electricity. Now, what are those three kinds? They didn't describe them in the book. They just said three different kinds. That's all. My summary or summation might be positive, negative, and neutral, or it could be as well electrostatic, electromagnetic, and neutral. I don't know what they meant, honestly. Now, the first three bands, the heavy ones, respond to electric forces. They react to them. The next seven bands react to etheric energies, both sound and color. When sound or color is applied to this field, those things vibrate in synchronism with them, and they light up. One of them lights up red when you apply red. It just goes, hey, it's red, hooray! And it likes it. It just jiggles all over. Now, this heart-shaped thing is pulsing up and down like it's breathing, it's rotating, and it's precessing also, like a top. It has a triple function motion. Now, next. Can you focus, refocus that? It's a little backwards. This is another clairvoyant's view of the ultimate atom. This is from Babbitt's book on color. And this is what he saw. It looks very similar, almost identical. The three heavy bands, the seven smaller ones, and you will notice, likewise, it makes 2.5 turns on the outside, and the return loop on the inside is 2.5 turns. Total 5 turns. How many fingers on the hand? Easy to remember, right? The figure of man. All right. He also saw energy flowing in and flowing out, but they saw a single energy beam. He saw a triple energy beam of color. And then each one of these, although you cannot see it too well, the colors are listed on the inside of the swirls. All right, next one. Now, when each single one of those bands was looked at, microscopically, again focusing down, it turned into a coiled spring. Okay? So, and likewise with the seven. All right, next. And we end up with what we call spirally. Now, each one of those springs, in reality, is seven lines going parallel to each other. And then at right angles to it, is another spiral, which consists of seven. These are only shown as single, so it's quite complex. You do that seven times till you get down to the very last spiral, which consists of these little bubbles. And that's ether. They are bubbles of what they call bubbles in collion. Collion is the solid mass. These are the bubbles in collion. To each turn, there are seven of them. So for 100 turns, you will have 700 of those bubbles, with the exception of what we call electric. In the electric, there's 704 bubbles. Okay? Electricity is different than other energies, isn't it? And that's... Now, what that means, technically, we haven't the foggiest notion. That's what they saw, that's what they recorded, and that's what I'm telling you. All right, next. Now, this describes the five Platonic solids. The tetrahedron, two tetrahedrons, the cubic, the octagon, the rhombic, and the rest of them. All right, next please. But we'll find... Now, as they investigated other elements, they didn't find that they were spheroid. They found that they had shapes, okay, into these major groups: a spike group, a dumbbell group, a tetrahedron group, a cube group, and an octahedron group. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the five Platonic solids in your whole atomic structure. Next slide. Now, this was put together by Sir William Crookes. Can you focus a little bit better, Scott? Went through it. Back, right? Yeah, okay. What he did was go through and, with using their help, he then went through and described the atomic table here. Now, the numbers you see immediately adjacent to the name of the element is a number. In the case of hydrogen, if you'll remember the first slide, we had 19 of those little anu. All right? There were two triangles of three each, and within those three were three more. So each triangle had 9, and there were two triangles for a total of 18. Now, they went on to count the number of anu in each element. They then added them up and divided by 18 and came up with a complete atomic weight table that we have today, within 1%. Within 1%. And they found elements that didn't exist yet, but they knew the atomic weights of them. Hadn't been found yet. All right, next slide. So, going back to here, just to refresh your memory, here are the two triangles. There are three points to them, and there are, in each one of them, three little anu. We're going to run into a bit of divergence or problem with modern physics in a little while. Because when we start talking about momentum, and momentum must occur in so-called integers of 1/2 h, we run into a problem because we can divide 118 by 1/2 and end up with a number. And if you divide 9 by 1/2, you end up with a fraction, which is what it's supposed to be. So, a fellow by the name of Phillips, H. Phillips in England, who's a physicist and also a Theosophy member, both of us wrote an article on this in the same year, 1978, and I presented a paper on quarks and the velocities of energy beyond the physical plane and explained where I got those derivations of the velocities. His paper is a bit divergent from mine because he requires, according to the laws of physics, that one of these triangles be removed. If I take one of them away, because what he said, in order to get for this thing to be balanced, psychically they put two hydrogen atoms together psychically. They forced them together. All right. Regardless, the major point is that as we get into Mr. Phillips' work, he is going to show us in modern quantum physics what these connecting links are and what they're all about. Next slide. Here we get into some of the connecting links. You remember we were talking about etheric levels. The E5 was the physical plane, then E4, E3, E2, and E1. Now here's the types of E3 matter. Here are the maximum number of combinations that they found. Next slide. Here's E4 matter. It is now structured. You begin to see, immediately above the physical level, you begin to see some what? Shapes, forms, okay, cubes, tetrahedrons, stars, so forth. These are the precursors of the physical grouping. Next slide. Upside down, but doesn't make any difference. This is E2, which is again, it's approaching E1, which is almost into the astral. It becomes simpler. Next slide. All right, here we have a kind of a schematic diagram of hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen. Here you see the familiar two triangles together in hydrogen. Here in oxygen, we have a twin spiral. This is a twin helix spiral. Here is 1, 2, 3, 4, and 1/2 turns. As you raise the oxygen spiral up into the next level, to E4, it splits into two bands, one plus and one minus. As you raise it up to the next level, you will see a string, and there's a central grouping and plus some single ones and so forth. Nitrogen gets again more complex, and this is the beginning of the dumbbell series type of configurations. You see these things go into different shapes. Next slide. Refocus, please, a little bit up in the middle. Okay, this is oxygen. This is one single spiral of oxygen. Remember, there are two of them, opposite directions. Now, I want to draw your attention to the energy flow and to the central configurations. The energy flow is down and out here and also, but bridging across and running through up that system and across. Now, the central ones, here's a plus and here's a minus. Now, you take a look at these and you'll notice it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of these of different polarities. The other one has 7, but they're interconnected differently. You see the vortex flow is different, quite different. Next slide. All right, now we come into prana, life flow. What is the vitality globule? What is that globule that is entering into your chakra? It is a vitality globule which is almost identical to the central nucleus of the heart of the oxygen atom there, of the spiral. You see the slight differences here. Here you have three minuses together. On the oxygen you have a minus, and a minus on the bottom. On the top you have three pluses, and in the middle you have a plus. That's the central nucleus of the positive oxygen nucleus there. Here, the vitality globule, which is flowing into your chakra system right now, at this moment, has alternating plus and minus as you go around with plus in the center. And that's prana. That's the stuff that you can see between your fingers visibly. And I gave a paper back in 1976 on that. You can physically see the etheric energy flowing between your fingers in a very dim room. That's what's flowing between your fingers. That's what's flowing through your acupuncture system. That's what you're balancing when you're balancing. You're balancing the flow of this particle. Next slide. Here we have a schematic diagram of the chakra energy flow that I colored up a little bit. And in this, it's taken out of a theosophical book. The central energy system is the spleen, but each one does receive an energy flow. But the major flow is coming into the spleen center. Next. Now, when we get into compounds, a very interesting thing happens. What we see here is water H2O. And we see two varieties, but you'll see that the oxygen spiral is up the middle and the hydrogen has split itself top and bottom. It's not two separate globs apart, they're intermeshed. So compounds, the portions of the atom split and then intermesh to make compounds. Next slide. Here you see hydrogen peroxide, H2O2. Here you see the hydrogen split at the bottom, two triangles here, two triangles up there, and here's your oxygen spirals, two of them, H2O2. All right, next slide. Here's carbon monoxide with the O being the spiral and the carbon being those horn-shaped devices which when you put together make an octahedron. Carbon dioxide, CO2. Here's two oxygen spirals and here's your carbon split up. Next slide. Copper hydroxide. All right. CuOH. All right. Here's the OH radicals together, oxygen, hydrogen, and here's the copper. And it's nesting neatly in between the whole bridge. Next slide. Sulfuric acid, H2SO4. Now, you'll see the hydrogen triangles down here at the horns. You will see the oxygen is the spirals, and this is the sulfur, which is a tetrahedron type of configuration with these cones and this tetrahedron. Next. Beg pardon? You got me. They only show three. I don't know. I'm sorry. It goes through this way. Vertically. Okay. Thank you. magnesium chloride, MgCl2. Similarly, another type of configuration which shows you how the atom itself in these physical structures pulls apart and reorganizes itself when it's a compound. Next slide. And that's all for the slides. Now, all right, can we have the lights now? I did have more slides prepared on the string model taken out of these two books, these two periodicals, but the slides didn't come out, so I'm not able to show them, so I will do some brief work here on the board. The first article that Phillips came out with was in the second quarter of 1978, and my paper was published, this is from the London group, my paper was published by the India group in December 1978, but apparently we submitted them roughly about the same time. Great deal of empathy somewhere in the world. You know, all major discoveries, what, seem to pop up at the same time? He's a physicist and I'm a dumb electronic engineer who really doesn't know a lot about physics, but I know enough to get me in trouble. In any event, his first article was a breakthrough, and he began describing some of the quantities in standard physics terms of quarks. I'm not going to go into it because it's going to snow you, so there's no point in it. The second article which is a real breakthrough, was the fourth quarter of 1979. This is published by the Theosophical Society, and it's available from the London group. Later, if any of you want, you can copy off the address. It's $5 a year for overseas subscriptions. Now, usually it contains quite philosophical stuff, generally speaking. Only occasionally does it have anything truly in science. Okay? But the breakthrough came when he wrote another paper which ties together the whole unified structure of both electrons and protons, which is missing from modern physics at this point. There is no tie-in between the so-called light massless particles, which travel at the velocity of light or close to it, and the protons, neutrons, and so forth, the heavier particles. I might make one notation. You will notice that in all these configurations, once you get past a hydrogen atom, you no longer see so-called protons as such. So protons and neutrons don't exist except in the simplest form, in the simplest elements. They only exist when you tear these things apart with an atom smasher and you rip them apart, literally. Rip them apart. When you rip them apart into basic elements, they fall into those basic little structures we saw. So the E2 level and E3 level are mesons and other particles. So you've got a whole slug of particles, psi particles, the rest of them. Now, after he wrote that paper, he came out with this paper, which is titled Occult Chemistry and the String Model of Elementary Particle Physics. He made the observation that these so-called energy forms flowing through these ANU looked a great deal like the theory that was in superconductivity theories. And what we have in superconductivity is a wire, and we'll call this the wire. And when you get this wire or suitable combinations of wire down to very low temperatures, the electrical resistance drops virtually to zero, so that if I had a round connection like this, a loop, and I started some current flowing in there and got it into the superconducting state, it would continue to flow forever. It just doesn't stop. And it's caused by what they call Cooper pairs of electrons, which are phase resonant to the spacing between the atoms. So it's just going on a merry, merry way. It's resonant. It's a resonant mode. Now, when you have the superconductivity flowing through here, a magnetic field coming from the outside will not penetrate, will not go through the conductor. It excludes the magnetic field at a certain point, at a certain field strength. Now, basically, and it enters, it will enter into this material right through a skin surface, and then the magnetic field bounces back out. It only penetrates minutely. So in the superconductive state, in the ordinary state of conduction, I can have magnetic flux running through the wire this way, I can have it running through this way, whichever way the magnetic field is crossing the wire. In the superconductive state, this way, here's the wire, electrons are flowing, we're in the superconductive state, the magnetic field goes like this, it goes around the wire, it doesn't want to go in it. Cannot penetrate into the wire. Now, in the theory, what they are saying is that this little single, a single line of magnetic flux comes also in quantas. Quantas, which means finite size bundle. Finite bundle. Now, the importance of that finite bundle is that in the string model, when we tie these heart-shaped things together like this, and we have energy flow, and we have another heart-shaped thing here like here, we can end up by knowing how many units of flux are flowing in versus how many units of flux are flowing out. We can ascribe a charge to this. And by ascribing the charges, those happen to exactly match up with the so-called quark magnetic field amounts and electric charges, both. So what it takes to make what they call a quark is three of these little heart-shaped things. That makes up a single quark. Three quarks make up a proton. Okay? So we got threes. The Trinity, anybody ever hear of the Trinity? Okay. The Trinity is in physics, right down at the very bottom basics of everything. Now, he goes on to further explain sets of just 2 ANU, 3 ANU, and more complex ones. He's developed the mathematics for it to explain the charges, the masses, the magnetic things, and the momentums. So he's got the whole thing virtually glued down, which brings me to gluons, what they call gluons. What they call gluons, which holds, literally holds, this configuration together. They call it a cloud of gluons, which surrounds this thing. In reality, in theosophical terms and in psychic terms, is again the ether. The ether. And last year I gave a talk on a book, on a number of books in physics, one of which was called The Dual Ether Theory by Sokolov. And in that, he describes both a positive and a negative ether. Also, as he goes further into this article and develops it, you will see a positive and negative fields. One is called gluons, the other is the Higgs field. All right. So, I think the only way I can adequately do this is hold this up to show you that the energy flows through these various little things have got numbers and charges assigned to them. And he goes on further. This is for the for the simpler E2 levels. And he goes on finally to E3, E4, and then the E5. So he's got, and there is the proton completely laid out for charges, energy flow, and flux lines according to quantum basic physics. That is the point that we're at now. It has gotten this far, but the coordination and the confirmation of what psychics are seeing by the world of science is truly a breakthrough, a very significant breakthrough in understanding what it's all about. Now you know what piranha looks like. Okay? You know what its basic derivation is. It's basically the central nucleus of an oxygen string. One of the two. It's the positive one. It's similar to. If there are any other further questions, I'll entertain a few questions. I have a few moments, but I would like to point out that I brought with me Xerox copies of this particular paper for those who are technically interested. I noticed that some people have already taken them, and I'm asking you to give me $1 for the society, not for me, to dump in the treasury. Okay, so pay me a buck for each one of these things you walked off with. I have that, plus I have a few copies of my article that was published 2 years ago, and I also have some other stuff here from previous things. I do have one, I should have, well, I had nine, there are five missing of this. Also, give me a dollar for one of these. This is the Odic Table of Polarities, which was given at the 75 conference, and this shows you the northeast, southwest of the complete periodic table up through and including element 128. I have also some books available by Dewey Larson, whom I talked on last year. New Light on Time and Space. This is $4. And this is his latest book. He has done six of them, Nothing But Motion. There's no math in here. No math. Okay? It's all verbal. But in here, he goes into some real basics, and I'll briefly describe it like this. His basic theory is that we all know we have physical space, which is three-dimensional. So we'll call it space one, space two, space three, from an origin, all right? That three types of directions. We also live in a time frame, time. But time seems to be what? Flowing, all right? But if I call a guy in New York City or I call a guy in Hong Kong, I can talk to him, can't I? So time is what? Simultaneous, right? At that moment, it's simultaneous all over the universe, at that instant. So time is then what we call a scalar quantity. It has only one direction, apparently, to us, and that's flowing. So we're going to draw a vector like this. It goes this way. We'll call that time. Time is all over. No matter where we look, we got time. All right? Now, Mother Nature always builds things what? Symmetrical. Left hand, right hand, positive, negative. Okay. So if we have three kinds of space and one kind of time, the reciprocal or opposite of that is like this. Here's an origin point, and we got this and this, and we got time one, time two, and time three, and that describes a cube. Space here, if we draw these coordinates together, can also describe a cube. The cube of space and time. Cube of space and time, who's heard of the cube of space? Okay, in what? Esoteric writing, correct? So we have three kinds of time, but then we have scalar space, right? Space which is everywhere, all present, always. Now, time does not interact with time. Time only interacts with space. So this time, too, can interact with any one of these three space vectors. Time 3 can interact with any one of those space vectors, or time 3 can interact with the scalar vector here, SO. S sub 0. Now, likewise, in the physical plane of existence, the world we're in now, we have space 1, space 2, and space 3, and those spaces, each one of those frames, vectors, can interact with T0, T0 being scalar time. This is the basis of his theory. Now, he develops this theory, goes on in it, very simply, describes what an electron and proton look simply by rotations of motions, which we see as a resultant in these quarks tumbling over and these little snaky curves and stuff. The limit is he doesn't admit that they're quarks. He thinks there's only protons and that's it. But he does say that the nucleus of the atom does not consist of protons above hydrogen. He says they are consisting of merely compound motions. But it is a new theory. I shouldn't say new. It's been out for 17 or 18 years. But for those who are interested in this field, this area, Again, it's another good source book to look at. We don't have all the answers. I certainly don't. But you should examine these books. This book, I bought 10 of them for $7.50. I have two left, one of them under the projector, so you can have them for $7.50, what I paid for them. They are retail. If you buy them from the group that sells this, which is formed around Dewey Larson, New Science Advocates, it's $9.50. Likewise, I got these at a bargain for $4. They're $5 now, so you can have them for $4 if you want them. Oh, and now, that concludes my lecture. Any questions?